You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Thank you for being here with us. And I think you're going to be glad that you've joined us this afternoon because we've got out the red carpet on the studio floor. In fact, Zool Bailey is sitting on it right now in his cello, and it's the Big Daddy cello, the one that's more than 300 years old, is on the floor beside him. He kind of set it near me in the studio, and it made me spooky because I didn't want to accidentally knock into it. But Zool, welcome to Juno Afternoon. It is so good to have you here. And you just came like an hour away from a flight from the lower 48.
I did.
And appeared.
I'm thrilled to be here, Rhonda. Thank you very much.
So what was the occasion for this trip to the lower 48? Because you kind of, I think you had to leave the festival to come back, the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival, which you're here for, to go to this very special event.
Yeah, I performed here on Wednesday night, and we went out to this celebratory dinner, and I got about an hour of sleep and got up on the earliest flight and was in Scottsdale, Arizona by 2:30, 3 o'clock yesterday. And I went straight to my son's graduation, high school graduation. And it was just a life event. To be there and to see that and to be there with him and to celebrate with him was remarkable. And even more remarkable was that after the ceremony, after the dinner, there was still no sleep. And we got back on a plane and flew back, and we all flew together. So both of my boys and me and my cello were all back in Juno, but no sleep for me for about 48 hours.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I remember maybe 7 or 8 years ago seeing your boys in Sitka at the Sitka Summer Music Festival. And of course, I was working as a reporter then, getting a video of you kind of behind the scenes. And there they were in the green room as you were warming up on the floor with their cell phones and their iPads, watching videos. And of course, I think they stayed with you that summer enjoying the outdoors of Alaska. So, and I remember at that time I said, well, so which instruments do these young guys play? And you said, well, I'm not pushing it.
Right.
I'm not pushing them into music. But have they taken up music?
My parents didn't push me into music either. My parents gave me opportunity to find myself. It could have been through art or sports or math or anything like that. My mother is a pianist. My father is a clarinetist. Obviously, my mother would have loved for me to play the piano, but the cello caught my attention at 4 years old. I tried to do the same with them. I didn't want the expectation that because I'm a musician, they have to or should be or whatever. I feel like, well, there's a great quote by Gregor Piatigorsky, the great Russian cellist, who said that you don't choose music, it chooses you. It's kind of a sickness. And I think that passion is kind of a sickness. It's a wonderful sickness. You don't know it until you feel it. And when you feel it, you can't shake it. My young son, who's going to be 15 next week, is into a lot of things and trying lots of things and is wonderful at all of them. And so that'll be really interesting to see. I'm not sure the arts will be that, but we'll see. My older son, who just graduated from high school, is going to Emerson College in Boston for theater. And so he's going to be starting in August in Boston. And he wants to be in the arts. And, you know, no one knows what that is, especially now that there was a pandemic and the arts were kind of paused for a while. But what I love about that aspect is it's beyond being a wonderful human being, being in a city like Boston, as well as being in a platform to continue to work on himself as a human being and present himself through theater and communications. It should be a great adventure for him, so I'm very proud.
I wonder what he took from you growing up watching you. And, of course, I know that you've had a life where you haven't always been home because you're performing. But I would say that if you hadn't become a musician, that you probably would have become an actor. And in fact, you've done that. I think you were in a TV series at one point, right? Playing a murderous cello player.
Right. I can tell you what they were looking for through me because they both told me that. They both said, specifically Mateo, my older son, said, Dad, when I'm your age, I hope I'm as happy as you are. because I really do put my heart into everything that I do. I don't see things as labor. I have followed my passions. You know, I told you that old saying that it was told to me at 12, that if you can find what you love to do and make that what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. I really feel truly to my bones that I've never worked a day in my life. And they see that. And I think that's what they really want. They want to wake up each day and do things that fulfill them and keep them growing, and not only because that's what they've seen through me.
But I wonder if Mateo, and watching you, because I think that's a wonderful gift that you have, to be able to perform musically, but also talk to the audience, tell stories. I mean, I think I love the stories you tell about music almost as much as I love the music itself. And
wow.
I wonder if Mateo picked up some of that watching you grow up, you know, on the stage.
Well, we've had a really high quality relationship, father-sons, great communication, great expression. And really no walls between us. And I think that I show that to them. And I also show that to my audiences when I walk out, that I'm willing to take that chance to put myself on the line and not try to be something I'm not. There's no handbook in life. You just try your best. And I feel that they so far have... especially as I'm sending one out in the world, he's got the tools that he needs to see the world as he should at this point in his life.
And I think that's one of the wonderful things that you and other musicians that have come to Alaska through the Sitka Summer Music Festival and now through the Juneau Jazz and Classics is sort of bring those people that inspire young people, because we suddenly recognize that there are things greater than ourselves out there, and maybe we too could embrace music like you and other artists have. But, you know, the other question I have about your younger son, I thought he was playing cello at one point. Did he pursue music as well? Or?
Again, he's done everything. I mean, he, from piano to cello to guitar to singing. He's an incessant whistler, which is annoying on the phone because there's the high frequencies. I have to say, you can't do that when I'm on the phone with you. He's a wonderful soccer player as well, and very athletic and coordinated, and he also plays basketball really well. I mean, he's just, it's that age, and I just keep saying, just go for it. You'll figure it out.
Well, your young guys have spent a lot of time in Alaska, so
yeah,
they can practically be adopted by
yes,
Alaska.
Yes, they spent their entire lives in Alaska. I've been coming to Alaska since 2004, and I've been spending my summers with them in Alaska since 2008, so every summer. And so the only summer, in fact, interestingly, that none of us came to Alaska or spent any time really here was last summer during the pandemic. It took a pandemic to stop us from being able to travel.
Well, we feel so lucky that you've been able to come. And part of why this is so exciting is that these are in-person concerts, some
yes,
of the first that Juneau has had. How wonderful to begin with the Juneau Jazz and Classics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We didn't know this 6 weeks ago that we were going to be able to do what we're doing. We're exceptionally lucky that Juneau has embraced the vaccine as they have, and the venues are appropriate, that we can have distanced audiences, many outdoors, you know, we already had lots of things in place, but when we pushed the go button about 6 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, I was ecstatic that we could get arguably the greatest proponent of the guitar, classical guitar, who plays world music and jazz and everything else, to represent the jazz aspect of our festival here, Jason Vio, as well as the recent Kennedy Center honoree, Midori, who just got her big award this past weekend, right before she gave her virtual residency with us this week. So we had Midori, Jason Vio, and then, of course, I'm also playing.
You know, one of the things that you told me a long time ago, and I've been covering you on and off over the years, so that's no secret, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been such a privilege to be able to do this. But you've told me that you, when you seek musicians to bring to Alaska, like you did with Sitka Summer Music Festival and now with Juneau Jazz and Classics, that you're seeking more than just musical talent, but something else. You want to bring wonderful people into Alaska. And it seems to me that both Midori and Jason Vio, you know, fit that bill to a T. But in talking with Midori and hearing her in one of her presentations about inclusion and access in music, she talks about how she travels all over the world to underdeveloped countries trying to bring music, trying to find a way to meet people. And I asked her, because she went to some pretty remote places and places that have all kinds of challenges. And I said, aren't you afraid? Aren't you fearful? And she said, oh, no. And then she proceeded to tell a story about visiting a leper's colony in India and how the cab driver that took them there didn't even want to go, and they had to walk with their instruments to perform. But that is so astonishing, and to bring someone like this into our community.
Well, I think that fear can be manufactured as well as experienced. I think if you haven't experienced fear, you don't know to be fearful. And I would be curious. You know, a lot of the things that she showcased during her time here were pre-pandemic situations that she placed herself in that seemed extraordinary, risky to some, but not to herself. And I would be curious with this, what happened with the pandemic, at how fast things can go down health-wise, putting yourself in a situation, if she might choose slightly differently in the future, because it is like life. I mean, when you're young, you do things that you don't realize might risk your life, because you think, no, this, that would never happen. But as you get older and wiser, you become more careful. So what she has done for the past 25 years is the bar has been set with community engagement, with putting the money where her mouth is, showing by example how one can change the world through music and the arts, hence the reason why the Kennedy Center gave her this honor, in addition to her extraordinary violin playing. I mean, she's one of the world's great, and has been, great virtuosos. And she's doing it for the right reasons. She's not doing it for a publicity stunt. She's not doing it to look a certain way or to be like someone else. She created this model. She did it way before. That was one of the questions I had for her, was where did this come from? Because usually people grow from something that that were a part of them in their childhood. And she was talking about just the psychology of what she notices is that music is able to do and change and help through her studies. She got a psychology degree, so she alluded to. I think it's wonderful. I'll be very upfront. I have watched her career from the outside. I don't know her personally. And I have been full of admiration that she has not only forged her own path, but done it in a first-class way worldwide. I couldn't be more honored for my first official festival here in Juneau to start with the wonderful Midori.
It's just amazing how much quiet courage she has, and you realize that, hey, for Midori, it would be enough to just stand up and perform. and yet, she's so much more than a performer.
I think that she realized that very early, though. We were also alluding and talking about the fact that her career started at 11 or 12 years old. And I think there's a a situation that most artists will go through where is they ask themselves, is this it? Is this really, am I going to just go through, do this over and over? Because at one place in your career, your bio really, biography and a program doesn't really change anymore. It's just different names and different lists and order of countries that you've played in. That she created her own fingerprint or showcased her own fingerprint. But she found it very early in her 20s, which is, again, that's usually when people are trying to get a career, let alone she had already had an extraordinary career for a decade at the beginning of her 20s.
Well, we hear a lot about diversity and inclusion these days because of things like Black Lives Matter, other movements, but you know, it seems that both she and you have been working on those causes for a long time.
Mm-hmm. You are correct. I felt a need to do what I have always done since day one. I didn't just want to play the cello. I wanted to get out in the community and show my love for music. And it just so happened that through that wanting to get outside the concert hall, I saw the power of music outside the concert hall. I didn't know. No one told me. I had no example. Midori had not begun her campaign when I began doing mine. I just felt this really strange instinctual need to showcase this beautiful music sound, the sounds that made me so happy. And I thought maybe it'll make other people happy and maybe they don't know. That's all, you know, you talked about this TV show I was on. I didn't want to be an actor. But when I was asked if I would like to go on television, I said, I will if I'm a cellist. And then I demanded to play the music. I chose the music. And then I asked them to cut my lines because I didn't like the way they were presenting me on paper. With what I had to say. So basically I got the world's attention on HBO playing Bach and Paganini and Popper and Paradis Bach. And I would never have gotten that otherwise. And that was the only reason I did it. There were no ulterior motives. I just thought, wow, if I can, the community engagement on the world stage like this, those people who watch prison shows on HBO probably don't go hear the Bach cello suites in a church in the middle of some city. And maybe they will now.
Well, one thing we should do is give you a chance to play here for us because I think people have been listening.
Okay.
When is he going to play? Because unfortunately, some of the venues, most of the ones that you're performing your Bach cello suites are sold out.
Sure.
So here's our chance perhaps to hear you. And I will chat as you get set in place. You've brought the instrument that I've heard you refer to as Big Daddy, more than 300 years old. It was the cello you met and sort of fought with. You weren't sure that this was the cello for you, but you said that you would rather play a cello than have a cello play you, as I remember.
Well, really quickly, let me explain this. I actually don't ever recall saying the Big Daddy, but
You called it Big Daddy.
Well, I might have said that because it's a very large cello. It's the big one. but this cello is it's true. I'm not along for the ride. I'm driving this machine here. The cello was made in 1693. In Venice, Italy, by Matteo Goffriller. You might notice the name Matteo Goffriller is the same name as my son. I named my son after this cello. And it was built when Bach was 8. So this cello predates the Bach cello suites by 20-something years. And so just as a sampler, I'm going to play the most famous movement, the one that I kind of wake up with each day. And since I haven't gone to sleep in 48 hours, I don't know what that means at this point. But this is Prelude No. 1 in G major by Johann Sebastian Bach. ¶¶
So beautiful. I never get tired of hearing that.
Thank you.
And I always have that image of you waking up and playing that. What a beautiful way to start the day. What a absolutely perfect piece of music.
It really is. I mean, it's actually one of the reasons why we're showcasing Bach this week for Juno Jazz and Classics. This is the piece that kind of woke me up from my shock and awe of the pandemic. When this all went down in March of 2020, I just stopped playing my cello for about 3 weeks, 4 weeks. During that time, one of my heroes, Lynn Harrell, passed away, a famous cellist. And I just didn't have, I felt like I went numb. And after his passing, I kind of looked at the cello differently and I started noodling around on it. And that's exactly what I started playing. I started playing Bach again, but started playing Bach in a different way for me, very intimately. And I slowly started walking through the 36 movements of the suites, six movements each, and subsequently recorded them again in January in Arizona. And that new recording's coming out in July. It's going to be on Super Audio with DSD, Direct Stream Digital. And that's 250 times that of a CD. So what you're going to hear, if you hear that CD or that recording, is basically what I feel while playing this cello, because the soundscape is so beyond words. And so I worked on them all year long, and so to celebrate that recording coming out in July, I thought we could celebrate. This new chapter, this new portal that we're in after the pandemic and how we got here, and just celebrate and be together in such an amazing venue downtown here.
It's interesting, when Shelley Delaney was interviewing Jason Vio, you know, she asked him about the pandemic, and it became an opportunity for him to try composing music, mm-hmm. something he had always wanted to do. So mm-hmm. for you, of course, it was to revisit the Bach cello suites.
I was much larger than that. I found that I'd been running at such a pace for 30 years as a traveling musician that it had become what I did and not necessarily what I should be doing. And I didn't realize the amount of noise that was in my life. And what I mean by noise is that's a multifaceted word. Distraction, people that didn't belong in my life, just how to fill your life so full that you don't experience the present. You're always running to something else, and just time to think. And that I didn't know I was missing that until I got it in spades. I just had time, and I had no goals, because there were no concerts. And it's not even that I couldn't travel. I wasn't allowed to travel. No one was traveling. So it was a really interesting time for me. I reevaluated my priorities and why I do what I do. And interestingly, my work in the communities, I realized, are my priority. Playing the cello is my torch that brings me through. But I would much rather spend a week or two in a community and become a part of that community and make a difference, watering those seeds. You know, the grass is greener where you water it, versus just running in, playing, running out, going, getting on a plane, playing somewhere else. That doesn't feel healthy anymore. And that switch is off. So it'll be interesting as we come back to this next chapter, how many random engagements I will accept into my life outside of my responsibilities in the communities that I want to be a part of for the rest of my life.
I have to ask you this. When I first met you, I met you in Sitka, and you had just taken over from Paul Rosenthal, mm-hmm. who we know very well here in Juneau. Mm-hmm. Paul and his lovely wife, Linda, who started the Classics Festival, in whom she wanted to pass the torch to you, mm-hmm. to do this. But one of the things that you started there was to refurbish Stevenson Hall and turn it sort of into an oasis for musicians to come so it would attract musicians to Southeast Alaska. And of course, Juneau gets the benefit because it's on the way to Sitka, yeah. and vice versa. It's kind of a beautiful relationship between the two cities. But, you know, Juneau is going through a lot of things right now. The Juneau Arts and Humanities Council is trying to develop a new arts center through the expansion of Centennial Hall. See, Alaska Heritage Institute is trying to create this, make themselves sort of a national Northwest Coast center for Native arts. And they're building a plaza. You can see it go up in all your different visits here. But I just wondered, you know, because you always seem to be thinking about the next thing, what you might see for Juneau and the possibilities with the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival, what could come out of this, how you could carry it beyond what Linda Rosenthal started, and she made it a wonderful thing, and now it goes to yet another level. What do you see?
Well, I wouldn't say it's going to another level. What she created is extraordinary and was so revolutionary. You know, combining jazz and classical music when she did decades ago was unheard of. Everybody was kind of in these boxes. Again, she is a visionary. And the fact that she and Paul Rosenthal made such a humongous difference and represent the alpha and the omega for the arts, I think, in this state, and the fact that I am now trying to hold those torches and continue to bring the arts consistently throughout the states, obvious performances, but residencies, schools, hospital visits. You know, I had a man come up to me the other day. I was at a cafe here, the Rookery. And he was visibly shaken when he saw me. I was standing there with my cello, about to have lunch with Sandy Fortier, our executive director here. And he said, "Oh my gosh, you're the cellist who played at the vaccination clinic." And I said, "I am. It was a month ago." And he said, "I was so scared. I didn't want to get the vaccine. I didn't know what to do. I was shaking until I heard your music, because I was playing there in the 15 minutes that people had to sit and wait after they get their shot." And he said, "It made everything okay. And it gave me perspective and it calmed my heart down." And he began like really tearing up. And he asked me if I would play at the Rookery. And I did, for lunch. And they gave me a free cookie for playing.
And I tell you, the food there is very good.
Long story short, when I said the grass is greener where you water it, I didn't want to leave Alaska when I first visited Alaska. I wanted to stay here. The first several visits were 3 days long each, with Sitka, with Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, the state. I want to hopefully be the lure to bring the world's greatest people artists, musicians to the state to inspire us.
Much in the way that Linda and Paul have done that.
Well, they have, of course, they set the bar. And so the only thing I will probably change slightly because of what we've been building is we're going to have more of it. The quality is going to be just as high. But because we're going to have more of it, the artists will be here longer. And they can really delve into the state and stay in the communities longer to get to know the people. So that's my goal is to continue to build upon the incredible foundation. And I will say this over and over about the Rosenthals. I stand on the shoulders of giants, and I love them with all my heart. And I can't. I am so humbled that have been given this opportunity to spread their legacy and the arts in this wonderful state.
Well, you know, they passed the torch to you for a reason. Yeah. Now, I know that our audience will be very annoyed with me if I don't ask you to play one more. Is that possible for you to play one more song for me?
Okay. Sure.
Do you mind?
I know. I can't really feel my hands, but I'll try.
Well, I know that that you've been on a plane and it's a lot to ask, so thank you for doing that. But I know that some people won't be able to go to your concert, so this will mean a lot to them. So okay. Thank you.
This is the Allemande to Suite No. 1 in G major by Johann Sebastian Bach.
Wow. And I hear that you have performed these pieces inside this Walter Soboloff building in the Klan House, which is designed so that you don't have to have amplification.
Yes.
And a lot of people really wanted to hear you play in that space.
Well, it's extraordinary space. You feel like you're in the belly of the instrument. You know, what makes great concert halls for musicians is when you can hear the sound that's being transmitted to the audience yourself. A lot of concert halls, they say it sounds terrific out there, but it doesn't sound terrific where you're sitting. So you're less inspired. The moment I played notes in that gorgeous venue, I just kind of got this glow and smile on my face, thinking, gosh, I feel like I'm inside my cello. And just with this surround sound of lovely color and vibrations. And that they're allowing us to present these wonderful monuments of music, classical music, the Bach cello suites there. We are very, very, very grateful. So it should be an extraordinary event over the next few days. I'll be doing it many, many, many times for limited audiences, but maybe we can continue to do other special kind of events there, because it is a place that kind of makes one pause and appreciate.
And especially because it's in the heart of the Walter Soboloff Center, and also what Walter Soboloff represented. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a person much like yourself, very, you know, driven to share. He shared his culture, his love of his culture. You share your love of music. I think it's probably just an appropriate pairing. But I have to ask this, as you played all over the world, what are the best places to play for the cello that have the best acoustics, and where does this Clan House fit in the scheme of that?
Well, I'm just going to repeat basically what I just said. The best places are sonically the places that give back to the musicians from the stage. Carnegie Hall is one of those places. My favorite places to play are when I look out and see my friends in the audience and the people I care about deeply, because that's when you really share. And you feel you're connected in that capacity to their stories as well, and you could see how it's affecting them. I asked Paul Rosenthal one time who his favorite performers in history were, because he has heard, along with his colleagues, so many of the, quote, historic, legendary ones. And he said, oh, it's very easy. My favorite performers in history have been my friends. And that kind of changed my perspective on things, because, basically, you know, your friends, you trust them, you know them, you know where they're coming from, and you hear them. And so when you have that direct input into somebody sharing music with you like that, or something very expressive, whatever the medium, you can't unhear or unfeel that, as opposed to just watching something and being a witness to something, which is when you don't know the artist. So this goes back to why also I appreciate Juno so deeply, and Alaska, because I have been coming here for over a decade annually because of Linda Rosenthal and her wonderful invitation to be a part of this community. And now I get to stay and be here more. And in this wonderful, again, venue that resonates out. And it resonates out such positivity for the community, not only musically, of course, but just as a structure and as a symbol.
Well, never has there been a time that we need positivity. And, you know, we should mention before you leave us here, there's a workshop tonight,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm doing lots of educational events, and Jason Vio is giving a 5 o'clock coffee concert, also at Heritage, and I'm giving a workshop tonight, and then it's at 6:30 at Chapel by the Lake, and then tomorrow the family concert at 3 o'clock at Twin Lakes, that I'll be performing in a safe outdoor environment, just projected in the glorious background of Juneau, Alaska. And then at 5:30 and 7:30 p.m., the Bach cello suites, my favorite movements and stories at the Heritage Institute.
Oh, and hopefully you'll come back for an encore of that someday, because it's all sold out. But I guess Big Daddy is, if I can call him that.
How do you know it's a him?
You know, I've wondered if it might be Big Mama, because she's got that beautiful rosette.
Oh, it's such a glorious instrument. I'm always asked all the time, what's the name of your instrument? And I haven't really decided, but it could be Rose, because of rosette, the flower that's carved on the top. This cello is just, it's a marvel, and I'm so happy to share it with you today.
But he or she will not be out at tomorrow's concert?
Oh, outdoors, no. No, so. I rarely would ever take this cello outside just because the varnish is so fragile and the cello is so fragile that even just the slight change of temperature really does disturb the structure of the instrument.
So does this cello like the humidity of Juneau, you think?
Loves this area. Loves it. The rainforest. I mean, this is where the spruce, the world's greatest spruce, comes from. The whole top of the cello is made of spruce. So it's like drinking from, a great waterfall. This, the instrument already sounds better right now than it did when I arrived on Monday because the wood is full of nourishment.
What a beautiful thought. Juneau, a place to come to get some nourishment. Well, before we go, I'm going to play one of your recent recordings. give us time to transition to our next guest.
Yes.
And be good to kind of a good send off.
Well, this is my latest recording, which no one's ever heard. And I say this because it came out early April of 2020 during the pandemic, and so it slipped under the radar. I recorded a live concert of the William Walton Cello Concerto, which was written for the legendary Russian cellist Gregor Piatigorsky, with the North Carolina Symphony. It was paired with Strauss's Don Quixote, the wonderful tone poem of Cervantes. And anyway, this is a live concert that is recorded beautifully of a cello concerto that's very underplayed by William Walton in three movements. I believe you're going to play the second movement, which is the Allegro fast movement, and it showcases a lot of interesting techniques, and thrilled to have it played, I'm sure, for the first time here in Juneau, for certain.
All right, here we go. Thank you.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.